Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Thursday. I got a really special show. We're going to preview the upcoming game between the USC Trojans and the Idaho Vandals, another Sun Belt opponent coming into the Coliseum. Before we get to that, if we get to our special guest, I wanted to let you know how to get in touch with the show. We want to make it interactive, so send us any questions you have. Podcast at uscfootball.com is our email address. A couple of ways you can leave us a voicemail. 641-715-3900 is the voicemail number. And leave us an extension 816-646. Hit the pound sign and leave us a quick voicemail. That'd be great. Or you can go to our website, peristylepodcast.com. From any of your devices, click on the left side of the page. And of course, you can leave a voicemail right there. And iTunes, love to for you have you subscribe to us on iTunes, itunes.com/peristylepodcast. You can subscribe to our feed with iTunes or any podcast app you like, and also leave us some positive feedback. That would be wonderful. All right, well, let's bring in our special guest for our Thursday podcast, Michael Sean Dugar. He's from the Moscow Pullman Daily News. He covers the Idaho Vandals and the Washington State Cougars. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Dugar, D-U-G-A-R. Mike, what's going on, man? Thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, Ryan, how you doing? I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, we're ready for some college football, week number two. And it should be, I don't know what to really expect from, the game on Saturday, another Sun Belt opponent. USC played Arkansas State, of course, last weekend. But we wanted to bring you on the show because you've been covering this team for a while and just kind of get your thoughts on what's going on with this Idaho program and the kind of direction they're going, what to expect, and things like that.
Idaho's got a lot going on, both on and off the field. On the field, it's a work in progress, just offensively and defensively. They got a really young secondary, a lot of shifting going on back there. First-year defensive coordinator, Mike Bresky, who USC fans might remember from past 2 years and then 2 years ago when WSU went down there and beat the Trojans in a Coliseum. But Idaho, this is a game they'll not want to watch a lot of tape of. I'll probably say that. I think Penn State just buried the tape of their last loss, like literally in the ground. I think Idaho might want to take a page out of their book after Saturday.
Well, Sun Belt, it's kind of interesting for USC to be playing two Sun Belt opponents in a row. You don't really think of Idaho when you think of Sun Belt, but Arkansas State was, one of the favorites to win the conference. Where does Idaho kind of fit into the Sun Belt, rankings, I guess you'd say?
Yeah, no one definitely picks or thinks of Idaho when they think of the Sun Belt just because they're about 4,000 miles away from their nearest opponent, I believe. Idaho, and also it's their style of play too. Idaho kind of plays just more straight up, nothing tricky, no running QB, no jet sweeps. Just, we're going to line up and run the ball, or at least try to run the ball down your throat and try to throw it over the top of you and dink and dive you. But, Idaho is picked to finish, I think, 11th in the conference, last place, which is probably where they'll finish. They've got a long way to go, just perfecting their offensive line and really establishing an identity just offensively and becoming more confident in Matt Linehan. Once that happens, then they'll move up the ladder. But right now, they'll probably finish around the bottom of the Sun Belt.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Mike Linehan. He had 36 completions last week, and I think it was like the best in the nation or something like that. Desmond Epps had 15 catches. So it looks like, there's some competency on the offensive side of the ball. Like, what do you feel that Idaho can do? How can they be dangerous on offense?
I tell people all the time, whether they think I'm joking or not, I think if Idaho wants to be successful on offense, you give the ball to Desmond Epps as often as possible. Desmond's a little slot back guy. Not too big, but he's really fast, really quick, makes good cuts, comes out of the slot. So if he's lined up against a backer, or if it's a safety or a linebacker, he's going to whiz by that guy and make a 7-yard play every time. I think I give him the ball every time, every chance he can get out of the backfield on sweeps, bubble screens, down the field, punts, kicks. He's a special player, and the more he touches the ball, the more successful Idaho will be.
For people who don't know, I mean, Idaho's, you know, Moscow, Idaho and Pullman are sister cities. And, you know, so if anyone's gone, made the trip for USC to go see Washington State, you've been up there in that area. And, the Kibbe Dome is something that people should definitely check in when they go up there. Maybe you kind of describe what, you know, kind of a unique environment that that is.
Yeah, that's the perfect word to describe the Kibbe Dome. It's just very unique. It's got that, sometimes it doesn't feel almost like a college football arena until you get the atmosphere. The way it's domed, it's very unique. It's just not just like a normal sphere, I'd say. It's really hard to describe, but it is a very cool, it's a very cool place. I'd say when it's rocking and it's got all 16,000 max capacity with the band and the fans all blacked out screaming, I'd say it's a huge home field advantage for the Vandals. It's just whenever the fans start showing up, then when they can finally use it. But it's definitely something I'd suggest everyone just peek inside of, if they're up on the Palouse.
All right. Well, we had some questions on the message board too. We're going to get some other topics too, but I wanted to maybe some of the fans, you could answer some of their questions if that's okay.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. So Jay Colgate on our board says, ask him how that program can ever get back to competing with Boise State.
Well, head to head against Boise State won't happen for a while. There's some friction there at the top of those two administrations, to the point where I don't see Boise State definitely won't agree to a home and home. Idaho would have to come down there, and that won't happen for a while either. But in terms of just competing, in terms of having a good program, I think Pacino needs a little bit more time, and I think he needs to maybe adapt to the rest of the college football landscape in terms of maybe spreading it out more and trying to use more speed, because, you know, Idaho's not going to get the big 6'3", 300-pound linemen, 4-star guys, you know, to just go head-to-head with Appalachian State and Georgia Southern. They can get speed, though. Speed you can find anywhere. So once they start spreading it out, and Paul Pacino can really become that offensive guru he was ticketed as once they pulled him from his brother, then I think they'll be much more competitive and be able to maybe compete for being the best team in the state of Idaho.
Okay. Jared Max had a question. He says, what are some of the strengths for this Idaho team that could create any trouble for USC? For example, Desmond Epps, the wide receiver, from what I read, is pretty good. He said, also, I'd like to congratulate you on handling yourself as professional as possible with the confrontation with Coach Pitrino when that happened. Part of the First Amendment is freedom of the press. So if you write a story on observations that you witnessed after 14 practices, no one should confront you in that way. I know I'm preaching to the choir, but the article you wrote in the news after the fact was pretty classy. Thanks for coming on one of the best sports podcasts out there, and fight on.
Well, thank you. I do take pride in how I handle myself there. I'll address the football stuff. We can get into Paul later. Well, I talked a little bit about Epps, but also Idaho's defensive line. It really is. It had its issues against Ohio in their opener, losing 45-28. Giving up over 200 yards on the ground, I believe 205 net. But Quentin Bradley is one of those guys that has a potential at Idaho to possibly play on Sundays. Maybe not get drafted, maybe go undrafted, make a camp, you know, just show his work ethic and strength and skills. Maybe that a lot of people didn't get a chance to see because scouts and so on don't get up to Idaho that often. But I think their defensive line, they play a 3-4. So they got Ryan Edwards, a big nose, about 333, clogging up the middle. Twainy Lupa Amanu and Quentin Bradley are both on the edges. Quentin is probably the best player on that defensive line, and he's someone the coaches have talked about all week, saying that this is his debut. You know, if he wants to play on Sundays, like everyone in the coaching staff believes he can, and like Quentin believes he can, getting to Cody Kessler a couple times, if he can, will be something to build his stock, I'd say. And so I think that's a name to look out for on the defense. And then on offense, yeah, it's all about Epps.
It's all about Epps. If we can just talk about real briefly, just the story you kind of wrote, going in there. Covering teams for years, you know, I've had confrontations with coaches, never one kind of like, what you described, but it was great to see, you know, now we're in the Twitter age when something like this happens. People might not have known about it before, but, you know, I've seen like the Dennis Dodds of the world, people kind of tweeting support. So you must have felt pretty good knowing that like kind of the national media had your back and the way you handled yourself.
Yeah. Well, here's a little backstory that I didn't make the column because I didn't want it to be 30 inches, but, that practice happened, at 9 a.m. I thought that thing with Paul happened to maybe around 11:15. I had a meeting with the Idaho soccer coach because I just cover Idaho everything at our paper. Our paper's pretty small. So I told the SID, look, I'll be back here to talk to Coach Pittman, the soccer coach, at 1:45. You know, if Paul wants to meet with me or if Rob Spear, the athletic director, wants to meet with me, that's fine. I'll happily meet with him because clearly we have a misunderstanding in terms of coverage and professionalism. And I got no response. And then that's around 6 o'clock. I got a call from the department, kind of trying to talk me down from my writing anything about it. They used a phrase saying maybe he wasn't yelling, he was just talking loudly, which I felt undermined my intelligence. I'm old enough to know when someone's yelling. So by 6:45, I had written not one word. I wasn't going to write anything, but it was the combination of the lack of professionalism, combined with just no accountability, you know, immediately yeah. Going to he wasn't yelling, he was talking loudly. Well, those are the same thing. Two, I'm not an idiot. So so if you guys, one, can't be professional, two, can't take accountability for just a mishap, just apologize, say lost his temper, he was walking right off the field, so he's still in coach mode, he knows you're not a student, that, you know, won't happen again. Boom. Then there's no column, there's no controversy.
Yeah.
So there was that. That more than anything led to the column, because once those two things happened, I got no invitation for a meeting and no accountability. I knew that there was a chance something like that could happen again. And I knew if I wrote the column that it definitely wouldn't. And now I'm very confident that it won't. I'm 100% confident that it won't. And as far as the support from the national media, I knew that was going to come, and I really am happy about it, because that way I feel confident in our paper not having to print a retraction or anything. You know, it's a Petrino too. So once you accuse them of losing their temper or doing something like that, you don't need many people convincing you, or you don't need much to do much convincing. You know, the people flooded my emails with stories about Bobby and their dad and Paul back at Arkansas that were way worse than what happened with me. So I knew the backing would come, because all I had to do was say a Petrino did something bad, and boom, people would run with it.
What's the relationship been like since? Like, I've had run-ins with Pete Carroll. Just coaches are fiery. They can be, but you know, you end up having to see them all the time, and you end up working with them or whatever. You know, you work alongside them, you're, you know, covering them. Usually I've been able, if we've had little mix ups, we've been able to kind of put it behind us and kind of keep going forward. Has it been okay kind of, you know, covering the team? I know there was some controversy about closing practice and all that stuff. Where does all that kind of stand now?
Yeah. If you'd asked me 2 days after, I'd say, yeah, everything back to normal. I went to the next two practices, talked to Paul after both of them, answered all my questions, answered everyone else's questions just fine. And then they try to pull a fast one on the media where they send out two different emails about the practice access, and they tell my company that I have to wait to the final 10 minutes, and then I can watch and then talk to players afterwards. And then as soon as I walk in at that 10 minute mark, you know, there's two other media members already sitting there, and I find out they've been there the whole day. you know, so, and then I find out later that their access is different than mine, you know, and then I confront the spokesperson about it and she gives me the runaround, you know, so I initially would say things are fine, at least me and Paul, at least face to face. Now everyone's just boycotting going to practice. Idaho's got a lot going on. Like I began with on and off the field. Personally, me and Paul, we don't have any friction. But the whole practice access being changed after that is probably not a coincidence. I mean, practices were open to all media all the time last year.
I think it's a typical response, Mike, that you see. Like we've seen when coaches kind of in trouble and they want to control more aspects of things. Practice gets closed. At USC, I mean, it's very open. Los Angeles, there's so many other pro teams. There's so much to cover. If you don't have open practices, I just think people will ignore, you know, major stories that are going on. So they've always had to kind of be an open, and, you know, Lane Kiffin tried to close it before he got fired and then they just opened it right back up again. But what you're doing, I mean, you're trying to fill up that Kibbe Dome. You want the most coverage possible. You know, I mean, I don't think that helps the program overall, keeping some veil of secrecy over things when you really just want to get more of the message out there. And you know, you guys are out there covering the team every day. That helps to sell tickets.
Right. There's only two professional papers in Moscow that cover the Vandals. You know, I mean, if you block us out, you know, no one's going to show up. You know, the team's already 2-22. I mean, as much. A lot of people, you know, have reached out to me and said, how would Idaho want no one to show up? I mean, I was at 14 straight fall camp practices, and I also own a professional camera, so I take pictures with my blog. So now they've got photo spreads every day and practice reports every day, giving them the most coverage they've had, you know, day by day in years. And then, you know, they shut us out. Meanwhile, they're trying to build the fan base and pack the Kibbe Dome, which hasn't happened in a while. Yeah, it's puzzling to say the least.
Yeah, you question some of the decisions that are, you know, but, you know, that's, I think sometimes it happens when administrations or, you know, people get on the, if there's a hot seat or people, they're trying to control everything. And it's just not the most effective way to do this. People expect you to like work for the team or something. You're covering the team. You want to try to be objective. It wasn't like you were over the top just bashing the team. You're saying your observations. So it's just been kind of a baffling story, but I'm glad you're kind of, you've been able to rise through this and stuff, and hopefully it's helped you professionally.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I know, I'm a pretty young looking guy, so maybe Paul just immediately mistaked me for first, student athlete, but then, I think he had the idea that we're supposed to help promote the program, where maybe that's why I also suggested a meeting, so we can make that clear. That's not my job.
Yeah.
I mean, when I called their downfield passing game a work in progress, I guess I should have put it in quotes because I got that straight from the mouth of his starting quarterback. So apparently he was upset with the lead to that story, which it more or less said that it'll be a while before Idaho is able to match wits in the passing game with their, you know, with the team 8 miles away, which, I mean, he didn't like the stab at WSU, but I mean, they're the best passing offense in the country. That's just a fact.
Yeah. Well, they have their own issues right now too.
Oh yeah. Good thing I wrote that before the point. Oh, goodness.
Okay. Well, we have a few more questions to get to. Jimmy and Joe said, just curious, but do you know how much Idaho would be paid on Saturday? And then in your opinion, is Rob Spears, the athletic director, 100% behind Petrino?
I believe Idaho is set to make $1.1 million when they travel to USC.
Wow.
I'm actually 99% confident in that. It's either 1.1 or 1 million flat. And I do know Rob and Paul, they're in that situation where you see a lot of the times where the AD is now linked to the coach. So if they both get extensions, it'll happen at the same time. If they both get fired, it'll happen at the same time. One won't fire the other, or Spear won't be able to fire Paul and get to stay. I think Paul is the third football coach that Rob has hired. So I know he's behind Paul. I've talked to him plenty of times. He's behind him. He likes what he's doing with their APR. Their APR scores keep going up year by year. That was a big deal because it was 896 for their four-year APR, their last uh, last report. So he likes rebuilding what's going on there because they had some academic issues there. He's recruiting a lot of good kids. I don't want to necessarily associate religion necessarily with being a good kid, but you just see a lot of the new freshmen recruit, even the JC guys, they're just a lot more positive. Even if it's just tweeting Bible verses all day, they got that kind of Russell Wilson feel to them with the new guys. So I think he likes that aspect of Paul. Whether they're religious or not, I didn't want to make that tie, but I think it helps illustrate it. He's bringing in good kids, and Rob really believes in him to bring the team around.
Oh, okay. USC Scott wants to know, how do you expect Idaho to perform in the Sun Belt this year, and what does the Arkansas State game portend for Idaho since they play in the same conference?
Arkansas State has a lot of athletes. They came up to Moscow last year. I think they picked off Linehan 3 times, and none of them were bad picks. They were, wow, did he just make that catch type of interceptions. When they meet again, that might be a scary sight. I think Arkansas State will score more than 6 points, or whatever they scored against USC. I think Idaho will against USC now will they'll try to play to their strengths. They'll try to run the ball a lot and keep the ball away from the Trojans. I think that everyone knows that's their best bet when you're outmatched like that. The more they don't have the ball, the better it is for you. I said I would give it to Desmond every chance they get. I don't know if they share that philosophy, but honestly, if I had to give a score, I'd give the Vandals maybe seven points, and unfortunately that might be generous.
Wow. Okay. A couple of people wrote in. Juju Smith had quoted something and saying it's going to be easy, or he had said something after the Arkansas State game. I don't know if that kind of made it up there and made the rounds, or if that was something that was used as bullet board material or ever at Idaho.
I know that quote specifically. I don't know if that one made it up here. I know once I tweeted out the spread when it opened, which was 42.5, a bunch of Idaho players favorited it. And I'm sure they talk about that. They know they're counted out. They like these games where they 2 years ago they went to Florida State, and Florida State was number 2 team in the country. I think the year before that they went to LSU. They go to Auburn later this year. You know, they like these games, and they don't need the motivation. And really, it's split between the locker room. You get the confident guys who are like, you know what, we're gonna go down there and we're gonna play hard, and we could win if we do X X X and X, and then. There's some guys you talk to, whether on the record or off, where they're like, you know what, we just want to come back healthy and try not to look at the scoreboard. So in terms of motivation, it's really split. But the guys who need to be hyped up for it and feel like people think they're going to get blown out of the water, they have that internal motivation because they know USC. A lot of the guys are from California. They know what they're up against, and they know what people think they can do. And they know people don't think they can do much.
Big Hawk 4 wrote in, so there's an interesting connection between the Idaho secondary and the USC secondary. He wants to know, is Armand Hawkins Jr. excited to play against his brother? Chris Hawkins is starting safety for USC. He got his first start at safety last week and played decent except for taking the big hit rather than wrapping up. What, if anything, should we expect out of the secondary with the starting corner leaving the team?
Armand is, I haven't spoken to him like at practice, but I do know he's excited to play against his brother. I'm hoping to talk to Armand later today, actually. Yeah, I've talked to the family, and they said they got 100 tickets. They made 100 t-shirts with Armand's picture on the front and Chris's picture, and it says Team Hawkins. And that whole family is just really excited to come out to the game, including their dad, Armand Sr. As far as Armand, I think he's actually battling for his starting strong safety spot. Him and Chris actually both got moved to strong safety this year around the same time, which is kind of interesting. But Armand's battling for that strong safety spot with a guy named Jordan Grabski. They'll probably both see time. I actually think that Jordan will start the game at strong safety. But Armand's an athlete. He's probably one of the better athletes in the secondary back there. From what I've seen, I don't know if he's as good an athlete as Chris, but he's a great athlete, got good ball skills, and if anyone on the Idaho secondary is going to make a big play in the secondary, it'll probably be Armand.
All right, interesting. That'll be one to watch. And we had one last one, Mark One, and you don't have to answer this if you want to, but he said, USC minus 43 or Idaho plus 43, asking for a friend who wants to know for entertainment purposes only.
Wait, what was that question?
So he wants to know, basically, is Idaho going to cover the spread?
That's a great question. I was actually just talking about that with some friends last night.
That's so hard to tell. I mean, when you're talking about a spread that big, and, you know, we had emailed a little bit, and, yeah, USC ended up winning against Arkansas State 55-6, but at the beginning of the third quarter, it was a three-score game, and USC went three and out. You know, it wasn't like it was some blowout, even, you know, a little ways into the third quarter. And then, of course, it kind of got out of hand and all that stuff. So it's just when you're talking about that many points, and USC is going to be rotating a lot of guys, it's just so hard to say. I like betting, but I'm not like a big sports bettor. I just couldn't touch a spread that's like that big.
Yeah, that's a scary spread. Although I'd be shocked if USC didn't hit 60. Just on pure. The thing is, when USC just starts to pull, say USC pulls their first string, and then they put in a bunch of second string guys who are 4-star, you know, freshmen and sophomores who would probably start at Idaho. You know, Sark got to go to his third string, which even then that might. You got a couple guys out there who are just diamonds in the rough at that point, or just untapped potential. So that's why I'm scared of it. But I'd say, yeah, UST probably covers. If I missed the name, I think it was Mark. If Mark wants to go ahead, put his money down. I think USC covers. But I think the fourth quarter late, when, you know, unless they're kneeling it from their own 20, I think they add a few scores to cover.
It's an interesting point, though, because last year, when games kind of got out of hand, they let Cody Kessler stay in quite a while. They really want Max Brown, who's a former 5-star from, you know, the state of Washington, to come in and get significant reps. So you got to see him play a little bit more against Arkansas State, and actually let him throw the ball down the field and kind of, instead of just coming in and handing the ball off, they really want to try to get him ready. So that is an interesting aspect that they might. It's not like that the offense is going to go into shutdown mode when they, if, you know, if they get the opportunity to put him in, because they do want to get him chance to, you know, throw with, you know, live ammunition and get out there and not just hand the football off.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you put Max Brown in against, you know, and you put him in the third quarter, let him get two quarters against the defense where the playbook is, or at least as much as he knows the playbook is open to him. I mean, that's not just a normal second string backup. Yeah, we're gonna let the clock run. Let's test out this highly talented recruit and let's score some points.
Yeah, I think they really want to try to get ready for, they open against, Alabama next year. So it's been one of the kind of themes. And, you know, that usually when Sark says something like, hey, this is something we want to change or something we want to do, they usually seem to go out and do it. Like they got, you know, real reps from Max Brown. The substitution's been crazy. It's almost like a hockey line thing where they're just bringing guys in and out. You'll see a whole, I mean, you know, they might put all freshman linebackers in on one series or all freshman defensive linemen. So it's definitely different than what we've seen the last few years where they would play 12 or 13 guys on defense and they would have to play the whole game. So it's certainly a different kind of looking team, but I'm not really sure, like we were talking about, what to expect. You know, later in games, I mean, there are a lot of freshmen out there and there could be plenty of mistakes. So it's not like it's going to be a well-oiled machine. It could work well because they're talented, but we just don't know.
Right. Yeah. And then what did USC play? 13 true freshmen, in that opener. I mean, they got so much talent and depth. I mean, if I go through the tape and everything of all my interviews from this week, I could probably find the words talent and depth when being used to describe USC upwards of 30 plus times in total. That's everyone. Everyone just says, yeah, they've got a lot of talent. They've got depth. They've got depth, 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 and more depth. I mean, their water boy might have 4.9 speed. Everyone's worried about the depth in the talent. Maybe not worried. I'll say this. Idaho doesn't sound worried. They don't. They may be internally, but they don't sound like it when my recorder's out and I hit play. So they have that going for them. They don't sound worried. They sound prepared And, like, they're going to come out and do what they expect to do. Now, whatever they expect, I don't know what that is. But they sound pretty prepared. But, yeah, once USC could get down to their third string, and it could still be an even ball game if Sark still got the playbook up.
Michael Sean Dugar, you can follow him on Twitter, at Mike Dugar, sorry. Mike Dugar, D-U-G-A-R, for the Moscow Pullman Daily News. Really appreciate you coming on and sharing your insights about the Idaho Vandals.
Oh, I love it. Anytime.
All right. Michael, thank you so much for tuning in. And everyone else, you've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast. Thanks very much, and we will talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.